online at bbc.co.uk/5live.
This is the Germany 2006 station.
Every game live
on 5live.
I think I'm right in saying the only chance of Argentina and England playing each other is in the final. Isn't that right, Mark Kermode? I know you've got your wall chart there and you've been following all the matches as they go through. I think it's Argentina England, if that's going to happen, only in the final.
If it doesn't involve the Iranian female supporters, I'm really not on top of it. But I can tell you that apparently they are very excited.
Is it true that about 20 minutes ago you looked up at the television in the studio there at 5 Live and said, is that David Beckham? And actually it was a tennis player at Queen's.
Yeah, but that's hardly my fault. He wasn't holding a racket and he didn't have a ball at his feet, and he was a sort of blokey, you know, handsome looking bloke with hair, and there's football going on. I said, is that David Beckham? And there was snorts of derision. But, you know, it'd be interesting, because if I held up a picture of, like, you know, Samuel Arkoff and said, I bet you can't tell me who that is, I bet you couldn't.
No, indeed. Well, it would depend.
Well, exactly.
Would it be a very grainy old picture of Samuel Arkoff, or would it be, you know, pristine?
It depends which period of his life you took it from. Well, if it was a recent photograph, I mean, obviously he's no longer with us, but if it's a recent photograph, then, you know...
Oh, that's Samuel Arkoff, right.
That's Samuel Arkoff. Samuel Z. Arkoff, the famous Schlockmeister. I mean, honestly, if I held up a picture of Louis B. Mayer, you wouldn't know who it was, would you?
You don't even
know who it is now I say it.
Movie reviews coming up, and also more football at 5 o'clock because it's Holland against Ivory Coast. However, let's do the box office top 10. Can you hear the Argentinian singing, by the way, Mark?
I can barely hear you over the sound of the Argentinian singing. Incidentally, the stadium that you're in...
Stadion Alf Schalke.
Yeah, well, apparently this is very big in relation to Das Boot. Have we already covered this?
Well, I haven't covered it. Have you covered it?
The Wolfgang Petersen movie.
It's a fantastic movie.
Yeah, well, I didn't realise this, although somebody's emailed it in to point this out. The team that they keep referring to all the way through that. Remember when nothing's happening? There's one moment in which they have a sort of a torpedo battle.
Yeah.
And then afterwards they're related. Then somebody says, oh no, our team just lost. Well, the team that they're referring to is, just pronounce it again for me.
Schalke 04.
Well, Schalke, it's them. So they are the team in Das Boot that the people in Das Boot are talking about all the time.
Okay. Well, I'm sure we'll have some correspondence on this. 850-58-MAYO at bbc.co.uk. Almost certainly the only reference to FC Schalke 04 in any movie.
And I just bet you that now you've said it, they're all over the place. That they are the movie lovers' team of choice.
Well, if any other German teams get a mention in movies that we might know about... let us know. But Das Boot is about 3.5 hours, though. So probably the greatest submarine movie ever made.
And certainly at the moment the greatest submarine movie with football references in it, but not the greatest football movie about female Iranian fans, which, as we already decided last week, is Offside.
Box office top 10 this week at number 10, Fanar.
Well, which I haven't seen, because I understand the print is in Hindi with no subtitles, but I am able to tell you from the BBC movies review site, from Poonam Joshi, that it is in the realm of disposable melodrama, yet rendered strangely entertaining.
That'll do.
Okay.
Number 9, Mission Impossible 3.
I think it's the best of the Mission Impossible movies. I thought it's better than the first two, which everybody else liked more. It's got Philip Seymour Hoffman in it, and actually, I don't think Tom Cruise is bad in it. I think, although Tom Cruise is a bit of a strange character, I think he's perfectly fine in that film.
Number 9, Fear Here Ferry.
No, again, can't help you there, nor can the BBCI website. It is apparently a light slapstick comedy, but that's all I can tell you. Again, this is to do with to whom certain movies are screened in advance of them opening.
Number 7 is The Wild.
Which is okay, but it's not, you know, the kids will enjoy it up to a point. More than that.
Right, RV at number 6.
No one will enjoy it up to any point whatsoever.
Okay, if you have enjoyed it, I mean, Marcus just said no one actually has enjoyed it.
Yeah.
It's at number 6. If you have enjoyed it or have a good thing to say about it, you better be smart on the emails today, because we have got football coming up and there's lots of stuff.
Is there more football coming up?
I've just said it's Holland against Ivory Coast at 5 o'clock. Were you not listening at that point?
I think I was just getting my Das Boot thing together.
United 93 at 5.
I think it's terrific. I think Greengross has made a masterpiece out of a tragedy, and I think it's a real story of human courage, and I think it has a moral centre, and I like it very much.
Poseidon at number 4.
Boat turns upside down. Movie lasts exactly 96 minutes. The original was much better. Unusually longer and better. I usually like my movies to be brief, but they've taken all the characters out and just thrown in more waves. Wolfgang Petersen, of course, who, as we were mentioning before in relation to Das Boot, this is what he's ended up doing.
Da Vinci Code, number three.
Rubbish, 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 rubbish. Book's terrible, film's terrible, acting's terrible. Ron Howard's worst movie to date, and I really like Ron Howard. And nobody, but nobody, has genuinely enjoyed The Da Vinci Code. The best No, they haven't.
I did.
No, you didn't.
I did.
When did you see The Da Vinci Code?
I haven't seen the film. You said no one enjoyed the book. I said I enjoyed the book.
Well, you're a fool.
No.
The book...
No, that is just absolutely outrageous. Melvin Bragg,
yeah, go on.
Who is a very,
Lord
very
Barg.
Bright man, as you know.
Nice to me,
I said to him, what do you make of The Da Vinci Code? He said, I found it enthralling, which is right, because it is enthralling. It's not great literature, it is just a novel, but it is enthralling.
It's unreadable porridge. It is, it's
X-Men
there.
3 at number 2.
Not as good as X-Men 1 or 2 because it's not Bryan Singer.
And The Omen's at number 1.
You know, it's a virtually shot-for-shot remake of the original. The original was fine because it had proper big stars in it. The remake is younger, not so good stars, but in comparison with The Da Vinci Code, it is, as I like to say, Citizen Kane.
And Paul in Milton Keynes. By the way, Simon, don't forget, Pirates of the Caribbean 2 is coming out soon. I can't wait for the rant already.
I am already in a bad mood about it because my kids are already sporting Pirates of the Caribbean merchandise.
Excellent.
Yeah,
excellent.
Great. Thank you. That's terrific, Simon. I feel really good about it. Thanks very much.
Classy product. Now, okay, so that's the top 10. If you want to go and see something that's completely brand new, try some of these.
Thank You for Smoking, which has been absolutely covered with praise since it first played at festivals last year. Based on an anti-PR spin novel. It's basically about a guy whose job it is to go out and explain to people that cigarettes aren't bad for you, that in fact smoking is really good, to go out and speak to school kids and get them to challenge the views of their parents who say that smoking is not something that somebody should do. And it's about the way in which PR spin merchants can make anything look good. One of the things our central character is attempting to do is to create a general good buzz around cigarettes, and he sees whether it's possible to get more smoking in cinema. As you probably know at the moment, there is less and less smoking in cinema. More and more actors refuse to light up on screen. And one of the interesting things about Thank You for Smoking is people have said that there is no smoking in it at all, and that's not entirely true. There is one scene that I saw in which somebody has a cigar in their mouth, although whether or not the cigar is actually lit is open to debate. But essentially, it's a movie about the PR spin industry. Now, on the good side, Aaron Eckhart, who's the main guy, the guy you heard there, the guy who isn't Rob Lowe, is very good at doing creepy, slimy, untrustworthy. He's a very interesting character actor. The problem is that as the film progresses, it loses some of the kind of cigarette burn intensity that it has at the very, very beginning. And it starts to become a film about how he can reconcile his horrible, corrupt job with his relationship with his young son. And things all start to go a little bit Hollywood in the process. So for the last half hour, it kind of falls apart. But there is a good 60 minutes, which is nicely acerbic, nicely satirical. It's got Maria Bello, who I think is absolutely terrific, who's one of the people in the Ministry of Death in the clip I thought we were going to play, who's terrific. She's in History of Violence, and I think she's a really, really good actress. As I said before, I think Aaron Eckhart is very good at doing roles that an awful lot of people would turn down. Rob Lowe is hilariously funny. Rob Lowe has really become good at playing slime balls, and he's terrific there as the Hollywood agent who sports a kimono and only sleeps on a Sunday. My problem with the film is it's not as smart or intelligent or hard-hitting as it thinks it is. I mean, as far as attacks on the smoking industry is concerned, for example, it's nothing like as acerbic as Michael Mann's film The Insider. It does have a little bit of comparison with Wag the Dog, you know, the PR film in which Dustin Hoffman invents an entire war in order to make the president look better, which again was a very early kind of attack on the spin industry. Bullworth is another film to some extent that's in that area. It doesn't have the bite of either of those films. It's directed by Jason Reitman, who is Ivan Reitman's, I think he must be Ivan Reitman's son. And Ivan Reitman, of course, is a great big, you know, famous filmmaker, which may explain to some extent how Jason Reitman has managed to pull in such a terrific team of actors for his first feature. I mean, you've got Robert Duvall, as I said, Maria Bello. I mean, really, really top-level cast. And it's fine. There is an hour of good, acidic comedy in there. What there isn't is an hour and a half of a brilliant movie. But, hey, you can't have everything. And many of the jokes are funny.
That clip that we did actually hear sounded like one of those Orange ads that you see in the cinema where someone famous tries to pitch a movie, you know, and they sit down.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad comparison. In fact, the tone of that scene is exactly like that. Rob Lowe is terrific. He really does that I am a slimy Hollywood mogul who will do anything for a buck very, very well. And, you know, it's nice to see him doing that role. I saw him on stage about 8 or 9 months ago now, doing A Few Good Men. And I have to say, my opinion of him has gone up since then. I realise that he's a much funnier actor than I gave him credit for in the past. And he's very good. It's only a cameo role that he gets in Thank You for Smoking, but he is very good.
And he was very good in West Wing, of course. I must say, I've
never seen West Wing.
Well, you should get
it's on the television.
Get the 7-bit box set. So it's a fantastic experience to sit in the virtually empty stadium, apart from the noisy Argentinians in the corner, talking about movies and listening to clips. Here's Peter Gilts on an email. Will you kindly tell Mark that movies are basically rubbish compared to football, and that's why no one could possibly recognise some obscure old movie bloke, but can easily recognise David Beckham. I don't quite get this from Mark, who says it's sad that neither Mr. Mayo or Mr. Kermode can pronounce this submarine title correctly. It is pronounced, as in English, Das Boot. Is that right?
Well, I've always believed it was pronounced Das Boot.
Because it's B-O-O-T.
Yeah, but, you know, hey, I'm not going to make any claims for my pronunciation. If somebody who actually speaks German, or maybe the gentleman who just emailed in then, because you can't email in a pronunciation, can you? I'll defer to you. Maybe it's right. Maybe it's actually pronounced Chumley Warner. Who knows?
Bryn says, can you ask Mark if he recognised the Sheffield United shirt circa 1991 in Batman Begins? I bet he didn't. I love the film at number 6. It's the rebirth of narrative cinema, by the way.
No, I really like Batman Begins, and you're quite right about narrative cinema. I don't remember there being any football shirts in it at all. But, you know, it may well have been that I just didn't notice amidst all the other carnage that was going on in that film. It's a very good piece of work, though. Interesting thing about Batman Begins is that it was shot by Wally Pfister. And Wally Pfister has now become one of the biggest and most successful cinematographers in Hollywood. Of course, he started out making straight-to-video erotic thrillers for Greg Dark. So, as you see, everything comes from slime.
Greg Dark, the former Director General of the BBC. Steve on this email says, it never fails to make my blood boil to hear reviewers and critics telling us uneducated peasants that The Da Vinci Code is a rubbish read and not literature. How elitist is that?
Didn't say it's not literature, I said it's rubbish read.
As if 20 billion of us that bought the DVD are going to realise the error of our ways and dash out to buy Umberto Eco or something. Pepe on this says, just a quick note to flatten Mark's sweeping statements, his usual nonsensical spouting. I've read The Da Vinci Code, see the film, the book is average but enjoyable. Film is perfectly adequate execution of the story and quite watchable. I think Mr. K goes on like this just to annoy us all.
No, honestly, if I thought it was annoying any... Well, I mean, obviously, annoying people is absolutely fine, but I'm not saying this to annoy you. I'm saying it because it's true. I mean, it's like people saying the Earth is round and everyone else saying, no, it's flat. You don't say it's round to annoy them. You say it's because it is round.
Yeah, one is scientifically provable and the other is a matter of opinion. But anyway, we'll be back with more movie reviews and your assessment. We haven't had any other references, I think, to Schalke being mentioned in a movie, so I think Das Boot or Boat has it. 85058 mayo@bbc.co.uk. More reviews to come, more of your correspondence, and of course then it's Holland against Ivory Coast at 5. This is 5 Live, 4:32.
On DAB digital radio, digital TV and online,
this is 5 Live.
Mark Kermode back at 5 Live Central, or whatever it's called, and I'm in Gelsenkirchen. Thanks for all the correspondence on Das Boot. It's clearly, basically, Mark, it Boot is closer. Das Boot appears to be about as close as we could possibly get. Kendra in California says, in German, the double O is just a long O sound, not the U sound it would be in English.
Okay.
She says, I devoted an entire semester to German vowels, which seems like a bit of a waste of time now.
But suddenly it's all come true. And, you know, it's great that we have listeners who can clarify this stuff. So it's like the Geordie pronunciation, is it? Boot.
Das... No, it's... Oh, it's Das Boot.
Yeah, well, that's what you said. It's like...
That wasn't Geordie.
Yeah, it was. That
Stephen
was
Thompson,
a fishy,
by the way,
on a dishy, isn't it?
Because I'm at the home of FC Schalke 04 in Gelsenkirchen. And he says... And Schalke, as we've already established, is the team that all the... Submariners support in Das Boot, which is how come we're talking about this thing. Yeah. Schalke apparently get a few references in The Miracle of Bern, a German football film.
Yes, which is actually not a bad film at all, in fact.
Right, Stefan Thompson. Stefan, thank you very much indeed. So we've done Thank You for Smoking. What else is new?
Well, film of the week for me, Hard Candy, which is this film set in LA but directed by British filmmaker David Slade. It's an anti-slasher satire that basically inverts the male violence against women tradition of slasher cinema. Story put very simply is that at the beginning of the film, a young girl, she's 14 in the film, she's played by Ellen Page, who, if you've seen the new X-Men movie, which I'm not a big fan of, she's in that. And she's a really, really terrific actress. Look out for her. I think she's 19 in real life. Is met over the internet by a middle-aged photographer he takes her back to his flat and playing Lolita to his Humbert, and you think this is going to be yucky and slimy and everything. It's going that area that's really, really unpleasant. Next thing he knows, he has a drink. The drink is spiked. He wakes up. He's tied to the chair, and she is there to avenge for all the sins that he has committed in his life. Now, the last time that I can remember a British filmmaker doing a kind of, you know, inversion of those slasher traditions was there's a film called Boy Meets Girl by Ray Brady, which the censors disliked so much that they banned it on video for about 7 years. This hasn't had any trouble at all. And in fact, despite the fact that it is a very tough, very nasty, very edgy film, particularly if you're a man to watch, it's actually visually very discreet. There's been a lot of adverts for it on the television, which seem to be kind of aiming it towards a popular audience. I mean, it's not a mainstream film. It is, however, really intelligent, really smart, really well written. It has leg-crossing moments in it that had me absolutely ducking and cowering in the same way as Takashi Miike's Audition, which I really, really loved. It's a great Japanese film which treads a very, very thin line between horror and comedy. The thing that Hard Candy does is it has, at its heart, a very serious message. I mean, it is a film about the nonsense that people believe about the sexualization of teenagers. It is also very satirically written and very funny. The dialogue is very acerbic. There's, you know, lots of great stuff that Ellen Page delivers, and very good script by Brian Nelson. It's very stylishly shot by David Slade. He used to direct pop videos and comes from advertising. But the best thing about it is it's really grueling and unexpected, and you never quite know where it's going to go. There is an extended torture sequence in the middle of it, which I have to say is real duck and cover stuff. And apparently when they played it at a couple of film festivals in America, some young men in the audience were so outraged that they got up, started shouting, started walking out, you know, really, really didn't like this at all. On the other hand, the female members of the audience found out for once what it's like to have the boot on the other foot. I mean, if you're interested in slasher cinema, if you're interested in horror cinema, if you're interested in seeing a very, very fine young actress, Ellen Page, she's going to be a rising star, believe me, in a couple of years' time, she's going to be very big. David Slade is a director to watch. It's a terrific piece of work. It's not for everybody, and like I said, there is stuff in it that is really wince-inducing, but it's much more discreet than some of the publicity has perhaps suggested. There's a lovely poster for it, which is an image of Little Red Riding Hood standing amidst a huge open man trap. It's very funny, it's very smart, it's very sharp, it's very clever, and I really, really enjoyed it.
So funny yet grueling.
But funny and grueling is often the same, and I would refer you again to Miike Takashi's Audition. I mean, when I was hiding behind the seat when that film was playing out at the Edinburgh Film Festival, you don't know whether to laugh or scream. And the thing with Hard Candy is you don't know whether to laugh, scream, or cry for most of it. It almost looks like it's going to fall apart in the last reel, and then fabulously it doesn't. But the reason it works is because Ellen Page manages to balance the character so well that you don't think she's just a cipher or a caricature. You do actually believe in her character, despite the fact that the situation becomes increasingly insane.
Well, this email from Niels says, never have I witnessed as much squirming in an audience as at the screening of Hard Candy.
Excellent.
While the performances are great, the horror horrifying, and the gender role reversal interesting, its ending is silly, and this dampens its social relevance. Also, what does the good doctor think about the MTV-style sequences in the film? Can he please explain their benefit? Their only purpose, to me, seems to give the audience a headache and break the building tension. And on the other hand, Thank You for Smoking was not terribly funny or clever. But anyway, on the Hard Candy point.
Well, on the Hard Candy point, I think the end is better than some people think it is. I know a lot of people think that at the end it kind of slightly falls apart. I don't think it does. On the issue of the MTV visuals... David Slade comes from pop video direction and also from advertising. But one of the things that impressed me about the movie is I didn't think that the visuals were in any way gratuitous. There's a lovely colour palette to it in which the colour scheme of each scene clearly defines the emotional temperature of the scene. The way in which he uses pastels, I mean, without wishing to sound, you know, technical, the mise-en-scene, the way in which he uses blues and pastel shades in certain times, then going to blood reds at other times, is actually very well done, to some extent reminiscent of the great horror directors like Dario Argento. It's interesting that having made this, Slade was apparently asked by Wes Craven whether he would like to think about helming a remake of Last House on the Left, which is really one of the nastiest films ever made. I think it's an interesting piece of work, and I think it should have been released uncut by the BBFC. It's still cut here in this country after 30 years. Slade turned it down because he wanted to go off and do a vampire movie, and he's now making an Alaskan vampire movie called 30 Days of Night. But I didn't think there was anything in his direction that was superfluous or was showy or was flashy for no reason at all. I thought it all served the drama. And the best thing about it is that even in the middle of those squirm-inducing torture scenes, and you really need to see it with an audience because, you know, part of the fun is just seeing whether everyone else is having as tough a time as you are. And there is a gender divide in that. There is absolutely a divide between the way in which men react to the film and the way in which women react to the film, according to the director also, between the way in which Americans react to it and the way in which English audiences react to it. In America, the film has been kind of overlooked. I hope that it does better here, because I thought it really was an interesting piece of work. Not without flaws, but one of those things that its faults are kind of part of what I like about it. It's ragged at the edges. It's a tough watch. Some people won't make it all the way through. I know that when it played at the Sitges Film Festival, for example, which is a horror film festival, some people just simply walked out. Now, getting people to walk out at Sitges is really something.
Okay. Have you noticed a sort of lack of blockbusters at the moment? Are they assuming in cinema land that people are staying at home and watching the telly?
One of the funny things that happens around this time of year is that you get these big blockbuster milestones, and in between, people release a whole bunch of interesting movies. So you've got your Superman coming up, you've got your Pirates of the Caribbean coming up, you've got all that sort of stuff happening, and yet in between you have all these little art house movies that are released in what's generally known as counter-programming. The basis being, if you can't compete with blockbusters, if you can't say, well, we are going to be bigger than Pirates of the Caribbean 2, what you do is you say, we are completely different. So on the one hand, you've got Offside, although obviously that's been released partly because the World Cup's happening. On the other hand, you've got Hard Candy for, you know, I don't want to go and see some great big schlocky X-Men movie. I'd like to go and see something different. Interestingly enough, Ellen Page, who's the star of Hard Candy, is both in X-Men 3 The Last Stand and in Hard Candy, and she's equally good in both of them, although she's not in X-Men enough to make it a good movie, which it isn't.
I do think that the people who are marketing Pirates of the Caribbean must be extremely pleased with themselves to think that you, the arch-hater of that movie, has... They've got to your kids, Mark. They have found your kids and they have given them merchandise.
What you have to realise is that everyone is going to... I mean, hey, look, it's possible that Pirates of the Caribbean 2 will be a masterpiece. I mean, you should never prejudge anything before you see it. I think it's unlikely, but it's possible. So let's wait, let's keep our fingers crossed, and let's see whether somehow they have managed to make a silk purse out of a sow's ear.
You're listening to Five Live. This is a brief cinematic hiatus before the football starts again. Group C, Holland, Ivory Coast coming away at 5 o'clock. We've got about 60 seconds. What's worth mentioning, Mark?
Well, in that case, without doing a clip, imagine me and you. Imagine Me and You is a new British rom-com. It's one of those films in which all the people are middle-class Brits. They all go for walks in Primrose Hill. They all work in apartments that overlook the Thames and have views of the Gherkin. They all drive Morris Travellers. They all use sweary phrases that nobody in real life uses. The twist this time is that the two central lovers in the film turn out both to be women. So you think, oh, wow, that's interesting. But you know what? It's not interesting. It's like Four Weddings and a Funeral with lesbians, except there's only one wedding. The whole thing feels positively funereal. And I don't believe for one minute the two women on screen who are meant to be this great sapphic couple are, because they both look incredibly awkward and, you know, unhappy about being put in this situation. The jokes are bad. The performances are naff. No one's as good as Hugh Grant. Everything's terribly kooky. If I see another shot of people walking in Primrose Hill, I will scream. And can we... The only interesting thing about it is this. On an equal opportunities level, it does prove that people of all gender persuasions and sexual are now equally able to have rubbish movies.
And the movie of the week?
Hard Candy. Go see Hard Candy.
Yeah, but
Candy.
For everybody else.
Hard
for ordinary,
Candy.
For ordinary
Hard
people.
Candy. Go see Hard Candy.
For people who don't want to see that kind of thing.
Well, it's a date movie. Honestly, believe me, take your boyfriend to see Hard Candy.
Yeah, right. Thanks for the wise advice, Dr. Kermode.